Hello and welcome to episode 453 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR. We're coming off of a Jamal Williams is on the Mount Rushmore of team sex kind of week. That's right. It was an all-time week for Lions running back Jamal Williams. You'll remember that during the Lions week three game, J-Will scores and then gave kind of three up and out pelvic thrusts for which he was given a 15-yard penalty and also fined a bunch of money. Truly insane. Talked about that last week on the solo pod. But as if that wasn't enough, the bit wouldn't die. On Friday, the Lions social team, the official Lions account, puts out one of the most bizarre videos I've ever seen. It was just 23 seconds of Jamal Williams dancing, gyrating, thrusting to what I think was an original song called Jamal That. I mean, you guys have to watch this. I tweeted on Saturday if you didn't see it. If you haven't seen it, I can't stop watching this video. It's so fucking good. There's one point, seconds four through seconds five, where Jamal Williams is performing what can only be described as air cunnilingus. And yes, Ashley Jennings, I know that he's not doing it right, you know, but still. So anyways, our social guys at ETR put my tweet with the video on our Instagram. And I guess somehow Jamal Williams found it because he posted to his Instagram. I actually don't even really know how Instagram works, embarrassingly enough, but I guess he like retweeted it or he added it to his reels or something with some laughing emojis and the caption, yo, y'all gotta chill. So now we know that Jamal Williams, the current captain of the hashtag team, he knows who I am, you know? Almost makes you feel happy to be alive. And then to top it all off, DeAndre Swift was out on Sunday. Jamal Williams gets the start. I play him in cash. He goes off for 26.9 DraftKings points. Lions didn't get the win, you know, which would have been the cherry on top. But man, what a week. What a week for Jamal Williams. The simulation is just so, so far off the rails. We have NFL players thrusting during games, performing air cunnilingus as part of some absurd OnlyFans hype video released by the fucking Detroit Lions. And then we have said player sharing my joke about all the women of Detroit being pregnant after watching the video. I mean, it's truly incredible. I legit think my favorite current player in the NFL, I'd say my three current favorite players in the NFL right now, number one, Jamal Williams, obviously. Number two, Donald Parham, Team PSM and Team XFL. And number three, Mike Boone, Team Preseason. Man, what a week. Anyway, back to week four. So I somehow ran into the Stone Cold Nuts and Cash again this week. I've just been running like the absolute sun. To put it in perspective, my career win rate in NFL head-to-heads is around 61, 62, 63%. This season so far, I'm at 83%. I mean, so ridiculous. Much like Brandon Cook's catch rate coming into week four, this win rate is obviously unsustainable. But this run that I've been on has prompted a lot of people to ask me if I put my cash team in tournaments. Do I put my cash team in GPPs? And if I don't, why not? So I thought I would share some quick thoughts on that here. I do not put my cash teams in GPPs ever because they can't get first. I mean, they're just really unlikely to get first. I mean, even when I have the absolute stone cold nuts in cash, in week three, I had a 97th percentile lineup. In tournaments, that's like a min cash or maybe a 3X at best. All the money is in first place in these tournaments. If you're not getting top three, you're losing, you know? So, and then on top of that, my cash team is almost certain to be duped and duped plenty of times. So even if by some miracle, my cash team would have gotten a real score in a GPP. And by the way, I don't think that's ever really happened in the last, I don't know, 2 to 4 years where I had a cash team that actually would have finished in the top five or even the top 10 or the top 20 of a tournament. Well, my expectation on that or my EV on it is massively slashed because of all the dupes. So I just really don't see the merit in it for me of putting my cash team in tournaments. Now, if you play cash a little differently, if you stack more, if you correlate more, if you go off the board more in cash, that's a different conversation. But to me, that's not an optimal cash team either. So, yeah. Speaking of which, yet again, my cash team in week four scored more than any of my eight tournament teams. It happens all the time. You know, typically when team play the best plays performs really well. You know, for example, I wasn't going to play Jamal Williams at 30% in tournaments. And given his relatively tame usage, I think that was right. I wasn't going to play TJ Hockenson at 25%. That one may be a mistake. I'm honestly not sure. I definitely think that TJ Hockenson as part of Goff stacks at that ownership was a smash. I just didn't have any Goff stacks on any of my eight teams. But regardless, you know, as contrarian GPP bros, sometimes you just have to take your L. And I know Leone talks about this all the time. And on this very podcast a couple of weeks ago, I talked about it too, if you want to go back. If you play tournaments only and you play well, a lot of weeks you're going to return stone $0. And some people can handle that better than others. I know for me, for my mental state, playing cash has so many benefits. You know, one of them for sure, like I mentioned, is my mental state. Yeah, I lost a lot in GPPs this week, a ton, but I still won a lot for the week thanks to cash. You know, it's tough. It's tough. People playing tournaments at a high level, you all week, you grind and you dig and you hunt and you look for the best contrarian plays. And then Saquon and Hockenson and Jamal Williams go off and it's just, you're immediately dusted. Like, you're just dead. You work all week and you never had a shot. And that's tough for sure. You have to be mentally ready for it. Couple other notes from week four. I thought it was a good reminder that it's really hard to predict D/ST scoring in fantasy. As noted multiple times in the preseason with the Millie Maker stuff and on the pods, there's just very little correlation between defensive ownership in DFS and actual fantasy points. This week, obviously the Steelers were in a great spot at home against Zach Wilson. They score 5 points. You know, Colts, nice spot against the Titans. They score 3. Carolina's 1%. They get 10. You know, the Jets are hardly owned. They get 10. I'm just trying hard to spend as little as I can reasonably in cash and then play any defense that won't be owned in tournaments. Second, I hope that we can finally put I can predict injury guy to bed. I hope. It's just so stupid. I couldn't say one thing this offseason about Christian McCaffrey without 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 mouth-breathing idiots telling me that Christian McCaffrey was going to get hurt this year. Yeah, no shit, man. He plays running back in the NFL. Of course he's going to get hurt. And now, Christian McCaffrey has completely owned these people, right? Christian McCaffrey has played almost every snap this season. He's played extremely well despite a horrific situation in Carolina. He's fifth among all running backs in fantasy scoring, right? And he's going to get hurt. I'll get to that in a second. Meanwhile, though, Jonathan Taylor has an ankle sprain. Najee Harris has a foot issue. Dalvin Cook hurt his shoulder. Alvin Kamara missed a game. DeAndre Swift missed games. Javonte Williams is done for the year. James Conner has had knee and ankle issues. David Montgomery missed games. Eli Mitchell is out multiple months. Cordell Patterson's now on an IR, to name a few. So look, obviously, when Christian McCaffrey gets hurt, and he will get hurt, I mean, it would be a miracle if he made it through the year playing all 17 games. But if and when Christian McCaffrey gets hurt this year, the idiots won't understand. They won't understand what I just said, and that's fine. But I'm hoping that most people, and I know everyone listening to this podcast gets it, but I'm hoping that most people do understand. As for tournaments in week four, my best team was on DraftKings. It was a Geno Smith double with a Josh Reynolds bring back. Also had Austin Eckler and Njoku. But it had Jonathan Taylor, so it was dead. And, you know, obviously I wish that I had correlated Eckler with Cooks or with Pierce. But really the team was dead anyways, because you can't overcome a 40-point game from TJ Hockenson, a tight end, and live to tell the tale when he's 20, 25, 30% owned. You know, even though David Njoku's 10.7 points at 3,700 is normally fine at tight end, when Hockenson goes for 40, I was just dead. I do regret not doing a Goff stack, of course, but I just couldn't figure out how to play it. Like, are we really going to double Jared Goff into massive Hock and Reynolds ownership? You know? And also, there was certainly some fragility with Jared Goff, like, without Amon-Ra, without Chark, without Swift. Obviously, there were some efficiency concerns. But maybe when we have arguably the two worst defenses in the entire NFL facing each other in a dome and everyone is so cheap, you know, maybe it was right. Shout out to the winner of the ETR tournament on DraftKings, T-McGee09. He shipped it with what was, at least to me, the best GPP stack of the week. Talked about it Friday night and again Sunday, the Justin Herbert double with the bring back. T-McGee went Herbert, Eckler, Big Mike Williams, and Brandon Cooks. I played two of those actually on my eight teams. I played a Herbert, Big Mike, Everett Cooks, and a Herbert, Big Mike, Palmer, Pierce. Just not good enough. T-McGee had Rashad Penny and Josh Jacobs, just smashes, you know, both really good plays. Jacobs for sure was a fine cash play, given he's the only running back that they're really using now. And Penny, we know his Chubb-like stealing in the right spot. Obviously, facing Detroit was the right spot. So great team, T-McGee. Congrats, man. Stay tuned to the Discord for the week five link for the rake-free $5 buy-in ETR league. Okay, I know all of you are in legal states, are betting sports. You want to bet sports. We've been doing the Friday night show with Matt Davidow, which has been popular. I think it's been really good. And I'm not saying anyone should be betting sports, but if you are, you better be getting the best line every time. I get ill, sick to my stomach to know that someone is out there taking a +3.5 when there's a +4 out there. You need to have money on a ton of different books. And the best part of that is not only do you get the best line every time if you have money on a ton of different books, you also, when you sign up for them, you get up these absurd bonuses. So go to the props and betting tab on ETR, scroll down to ETR Sportsbook bonus offers. You'll see all the bonus offers we have by state. Take advantage of it. Please, they're giving out free money. It will not last. All right, enough is enough. Let's get to everyone's favorite portion of the program, the listener questions. Producer Luke, hit the theme music. All right. Thanks so much to everyone for the questions. Going to go over some of the ones that I was not able to get to last week, and then we'll ask for some fresh ones next week. Question one from Double J. He says, your article on game selection seemed to favor smaller field single entry GPPs over larger ones, which surprised me because I thought larger fields were softer. Can you elaborate? For example, the 5,500 man spy versus the smaller 2,200 man spy. Yeah, good question, Double J. First, I would say that I agree with your assumption that larger fields are softer. I mean, obviously, the Millie Maker has the weakest field every week. But when we're talking about stuff like the 5,500 entry spy versus the 2,200 entry spy, I think the 5,500 entry version is softer, but I've never actually tested the data there, so I can't be certain. Regardless, though, I think for me, at least, the idea is that in the smaller field stuff, you don't need the perfect lineup, right? You don't need the actual nuts to win the tournament. And I prefer that. I think it fits my style better. Also, you're just straight up more likely to win the tournament, obviously, you know, with fewer people to beat. And with such a huge percentage of the prize pool going to first, that's what we really need to build the role. Question two from Uncle Hefe. He says, my buddy found out 3 years after a vasectomy, his stuff regrew and he is expecting a third child. Confirmed swimmers back in the tubes, a 1 in 8,000 chance. Any advice for someone who hit such an outlier outcome and got a kid instead of a bink? I'll say two things. First, Hefe, man, like this is not the kind of shit I need to hear, bro. I really don't. I really don't appreciate you sending me this. I've actually never heard of this before. I, of course, have heard of people getting their vasectomy reversed, but I've never heard of it regrowing. The second thing I would say is that, I mean, I hate to say this for your buddy, but I would get a paternity test on it. I just would, you know. I don't think that there's a regrowing as a thing. I really don't. And if it is, it sounds way rarer to me from my research on vasectomies than 1 in 8,000. And so I think there's more going on here. But if it is real and he did get regrowth, I mean, I'm not a religious guy at all. In fact, you know, quite the opposite. But I think, Hefe, that God is telling your boy that he was put on earth to spread his seed, man. You know, most of us know the 10 commandments. Your buddy has 11, and the 11th is that God wants him to get out there and keep fucking, you know, sustain the human race. So lots to unpack there, but good luck to your buddy. Question three from Randy Bobandy. He says, Hey, Adam, love all the ETR content. Is there an edge to be had playing the Sunday, Monday, or even Thursday, Monday slates for DFS? Seems like most educated players are playing the main slate. Could these less popular slates be softer? Oh, there's no doubt, Randy. There's no doubt at all. The smaller the market you're in anything, the softer it will be. For example, let's say I want to bet college football. If I'm looking to win, what should I focus on? Betting FCS or betting top 25 Division I games? You know, what's easier to beat? NFL props or NFL sides? Like, of course, FCS is easier. Of course, props are easier. It's a smaller market. Limits are lower. So, and it's no different for fantasy. You know, all the big action, all the liquidity, all the focus is on the main slate. Smaller slates, I think there's certainly more room to capitalize on edges that you might have. Now, I will say that it's mitigated a little bit by because true casuals, like the true phone shitter lineup bros, they aren't playing the off-brand slates. So you get a higher concentration of good players in those off-brand slates. But again, the lack of material out there on those slates, I think you get a lot of people who think they're good, but in reality, I'm not so sure. So yeah, I don't play them as much anymore. I used to always play 1 p.m. only, 4 p.m. only, Sunday, Monday slate, etc. Question 4 from Brian Drake. He says, hey, Adam, do you subscribe to anyone on OnlyFans? Thoughts on the site and the idea of paying for amateur porn in a world of free content? These ladies hustle harder than fantasy bloggers. Yeah, I know no one's going to believe me. And that's cool. You know, I deserve no one to believe me, but I've actually never been on OnlyFans. Never. Not that I have any problem with it. Obviously, you know, I want women or men or I don't even know what's going on there. You know, I want them to get paid the max, get paid what the free market thinks they are worth, of course. But I would say the whole idea of direct to consumer, direct to audience, I mean, to me, that's been one of the great triumphs of modern internet. Evan and I, you know, we don't need ESPN or NBC or some third party. You know, we reach the fantasy football audience directly. You know, we can start our own podcast. We can start a YouTube. We can grow our Twitter. Why do we need anyone else to do that for us? You know, so they can take a big cut. And it's got to be the same thing in porn. I mean, why should some third party site like Bang Bros or whatever? I mean, why work for them if you can make money going direct to your fans? Now, all that being said, I've never been on OnlyFans because, I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, guys. Is the shit that's free out there not good enough for you? I mean, I can't really fathom the free stuff not being good enough. It's just so ridiculously vast. I can find anything for free out there in porn. But maybe, you know, my take there is just because the way I grew up. When I was growing up, we would steal Playboys from 7-Eleven. We'd look at Victoria's Secret catalogs. If someone got a VHS tape of a porno, you know, everyone would pass it around like gold. So yeah, the free shit online now is more than good enough, in my opinion. But you know what? I get it. I guess it's kind of like ETR. Like, of course you could get some free shit to help you with fantasy somewhere else. But if you want the best, you pay for ETR. So yeah, the more that I think about it, I got to say, a lot of similarities between us and our friends at OnlyFans. Question 5 from Pimple Popper MD. He's hitting the point with my older son, who's 12, where he's aware of the money in play on DFS betting poker. We always had a rule of not letting kids know how much we have slash make to avoid entitlement. However, it seems key that he understands the work it takes to be a sharp. What's my strategy? I wish I had a good answer here, Pimple Popper, MD. It's certainly a struggle to try to keep the kids grounded to some degree. You know, the last thing I need is them seeing that daddy has a Kia in play in DFS this week. I think I will try to hide that even when they are 12. My kids right now are 7 and 4. They get what's going on at some level, but not really. Now, do I plan to let them make their own teams, you know, put it in play with their own money from their allowance if they want? You know, make a team. I'll put it in the $1 or the 50 cent for them. They can sweat it. I think that's fine. I think it's actually good. They'll lose and they'll lose and they'll lose and they'll realize how much work goes into winning. You know, how hard it is. Maybe even get frustrated enough to not want to do it. And that's okay. You know, maybe that's more than okay. That's probably good, to be honest, at this point. I think one day when they're older, if they want to play seriously, you know, any game really, chess, poker, Connect Four, DFS, video games, whatever, they'll realize that they have to be really smart about it and intentional about it and thoughtful and work hard. So I think that's all good stuff. But look, a big part of this entitlement stuff with kids is it's a problem because it's my life also. Like, should I really not get a really nice TV for my house because I don't want the kids to be spoiled? I mean, come on, what about me? I want a big, nice TV. You know, you got to look out for number one sometimes. So I don't really have any great ideas here, Pimple Popper. Wish I did. Question six from Stephen Curtis. He says, curious your take on electric vehicles. When will EVs be plus EV? I actually don't really know. I haven't looked at that at all. I currently have a Honda Pilot. I mean, I needed a car when I got to Colorado. I flew out here for 48 hours to close on our house and get a car. And I mean, I'm in the suburbs. I just bought a fucking Honda that can fit eight people comfortably. That's how the river runs out when you have the unprotected intercourse, man. It just is what it is. And look, if I'm being honest, I know nothing, zero, about climate change or the environment. You know, I love when people ask actors or athletes or fantasy football bros about climate change. Like, come on, man. Like, what about asking the people who actually been studying this shit for their entire life? Do we really care what LeBron thinks about the geopolitical scene in China or, you know, the polar ice caps melting? Like, I gamble. I make sex jokes on the internet. I don't have an educated take on climate change. The only take that I really have is that the issue will be solved by private people trying to make money. I think that's how, in my opinion, is that that's how stuff gets done. Like, I assume Teslas, I don't know for sure. I assume Teslas are good for the environment. The more people drive a Tesla, the better it is for the environment. Probably really good, right? And Elon Musk builds Tesla into this massively, insanely popular company. He gets insanely rich along the way. And he's also selling a ton of cars that are good for society. You know, that I think that's what we need. Products where people can make a lot of money off it. The incentive is there for them while also helping our planet long-term. I mean, to me, that's it. But yeah, I'm really the last person that we should be asking about this stuff. Question seven from Eli Wiener. He says, you've talked about the Sunday 7-hour grind from 4:30 a.m. until lineups lock. What is your optimal caffeine versus hydration strategy? What do you eat for energy, but that won't turn you into a toilet lineup builder? Yeah, I actually operate pretty well, I think, without any supplements. You know, I never drink coffee. I've never taken Adderall. I never drink soda. Pretty much water and peach Snapple only. On Sunday mornings, usually I'll just have a banana and a lot of water and be perfectly fine. There's this like crazy focus that I get when I'm gambling at higher stakes. It's weird. And I think it's just an adrenaline thing that I get. I don't really think about food. I don't think about anything else. And it's wild that I still feel that and still have that focus because the same thing's been happening to me for like 20 years. The last thing I'd add is that I've been reading about water fasting. And man, the benefits seem like so massive. If you believe some of the research, which I don't know, it's hard to find different, you can find different opinions on everything. But I'm definitely, from what I've read, very interested in going to do some water fast, like 24 hours, water only, and try to build up to more hours from there. Just the general idea of it makes sense to me. If your body isn't constantly breaking down food and sugar and all the shit that we put in our body, it can focus on other things that are insanely beneficial to our health. So I was thinking that Sunday would be a good day since I really don't have too much time to eat anyways to do like a 24-hour water fast on Sunday. So yeah. Question eight, last question we're going to do today comes from Joel Merrickal. Question for the solo pod. Wife wants a threesome, as do I. My wife is really good looking, see my profile picture, but I don't want to push it too hard for fear of repercussions. Married life, four kids, suburbs, etc. I'm very interested though. We go to a strip club for date night, but I worry if I show too much interest in the threesome, home life would get strained. How do I move forward with a top EV outcome? Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Now we are cooking with gas, Joel. This play, this threesome play, has a massive ceiling, clearly. I think. It's bad enough that I ruin one person's sexual experience. I don't need to ruin two poor ladies' sexual experience also. On top of that, what if after this threesome with your wife and another girl, what if after that, she's like, oh, you know what, Joel? You know what, honey? You got to have a threesome with another girl. Now I want to have a threesome with you and another guy. I mean, that is a fucking disaster outcome in my opinion. And yeah, you know, let's say that there's other bad things. I mean, let's say you pay too much attention to the other girl, you know, during the encounter and not enough to your wife. I could see things going bad that way too. So I think there's a lot of downside, man. I actually think is a good spot for some, you know, pregame ground rules. Find out exactly what's cool with your wife. Be clear. This is a total one-off. I mean, this whole like conversation about it is not sexy, right? I think generally spontaneity is way better. Just go for it in the throes of passion. But I don't know, man. You know, I'm not sure that going the spontaneity route is a good idea. Anyway, I wish I had better advice here, Joel. You know, strip club for date night in the burbs with four kids. I mean, you're already halfway to being an orgy guy anyways. You might as well just go all the way for it. Start wearing robes around the house and smoking a pipe and eating mangoes and listening to techno and driving a Chevy Camaro, you know, just go for it. Then let us know how it goes. I mean, I have so little in life. You got to get me the details, Joel. You know, you're not in the mood for details. You get in the mood. All right. That is going to do it for another edition of the Solo Pod. I'll be back later tonight with Silva for both the NFC and the AFC team by team pods. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube or on podcasts or wherever you are listening to this show. Really helps us out a lot. For Jerry, for producer Luke, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.